as I wait, heart of God.
Well, hello, New Life. We are rocking away in the Sermon on the Mount now, aren't we? We have the Beatitudes under our belt, and now we're tackling the second half of Jesus' introduction to the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 5, 13 to 20, we have salt of the earth, light of the world, and Jesus' explanation of the Christian's relationship with the law, the Old Testament law. What's that all about? That's kind of a lot to handle on Sunday, don't you think?
Oh, yes, it is a lot to handle. And these things are, you know, salt and light is such a clear statement of what Jesus is saying to. He's talked about the sort of the kingdom values. Now he's saying this is the sort of impact that you're going to have on the world.
Right.
This is the impact that that I'm calling you to have in on the culture, the world in which you live.
I like that. Beatitudes are who you are on the inside. Salt and light is what you're to do on the outside.
And our first question is, once again, we have given you the light bulb, the question mark, and the arrow, and there's an awful lot of stuff that might be all of those three things in this particular text.
I know there's going to be a lot of question marks with that last bit about the law, or at least I have quite a few myself.
Right. Yeah, it is. You know, you read it and you think, well, okay, so what are you really saying here? But the second question is called the light of the world. And Jesus said to his disciples, you are the light of the world. And yet, we just read of Jesus that the people in dwelling in darkness have seen a great light. And later in his ministry, Jesus would announce, I am the light of the world. What does this teach us about the relationship between Jesus and his disciples? Are there any dark places you encounter on a week-to-week basis that need Jesus' light? And how might Christ shine through you in those places?
Yeah, I think even that last phrase, that last question, kind of points to the relationship between Christ and his disciples. So it's Christ's light that's shining through Christ's disciples. That's how we can be the light of the world, and Christ can be the light as well, he being that source. So
it's almost like... we're the power, and he's the light. He's the power. We're just a light bulb. His power, it switches on.
Yeah, I think you've probably heard of the metaphor of a reflection. We only reflect his light.
Right,
the sun comes down. We take a mirror and shine it where we see darkness. So yeah, there's a whole host of different applications that one could take this question. I think that the work that Matthew 25 is doing right now is an excellent example of shining light in a dark world. But yeah, I think that this question also brings up just what the Christian's relationship is to be like in the world. So we're clearly in the world, but we're also called not to be of the world. John tells us not to love the world and the things of the world, and yet we're clearly called to an outward ministry. And Jesus makes that plain so early in his sermon here.
Mm. And then the second question is called fan into flame. Or actually, it's the third question. Jesus lists two negative things that can happen to salt or light. What are they? How might a Christian lose his or her saltiness? How might this be avoided? Have there been times when you've been tempted to hide your light under a basket?
Well, I'm sure the answer to that question is yes for just about everybody, unless you yourself are living under a basket. So what are those negative things what we're talking about? Well, salt can lose its saltiness, Jesus says, and light can be hidden under a basket. Those are the negative sides that Jesus asks us to correct in our lives if they're present. I gave you a couple references there after the question about losing saltiness, which referenced the state of one's relationship with the Spirit inside of him. Ephesians 4 tells us that we aren't to grieve the Spirit of God, and First Thessalonians 5 says, "Do not quench the Spirit." I think that that kind of activity is really in the same realm as losing one's saltiness. And of course, you can think of tons of ways that you can keep up your saltiness level. All of the obvious answers are the right ones. Spending time in the Word and prayer and in church. And we've pointed to some of those with the references that we've given you. I do hope this question will be a helpful one for you.
Yes, I think this whole... These two questions, the light of the world and the fan into flame, addressing this whole area of salt and light, the interesting thing is that if we take these questions seriously, because Jesus uses the verb are, not like you could be, you might be, or if you're good, you will be. He says you are the light of the world, and therefore these things are. One of the things that he's saying to his disciples that these are the responsibilities that I'm passing to you, and therefore, and he doesn't change those responsibilities today. That these are the responsibilities that Jesus says, Jonathan, you are the light of the world. You are the salt of the earth. And if I've lost my saltiness, it has an effect on the
rest of the world isn't going to get salted if there's no salt in your salt shaker. We're rushing through these questions pretty quick. I think we have time to think together about the role of mission in the Bible. So followers of Yahweh, of God, are called to be those on mission, as God is on mission. God has a mission himself to win back rebellious souls. And that mission, man's mission, is depicted from the very first chapter of the Bible. So Genesis 1, God blesses Adam and Eve, and he says to them, be fruitful and multiply. There's your mission. Fill the earth, subdue it, rule over it in a good, godly way. Just as I am king over this world, so now I am placing you as king and queen over this earth. And then along comes Abraham 11 chapters later, and God says, I'm going to bless you just like you did Abraham, just like you did Adam and Eve. I'm going to bless you, and I'm also going to bless people through you. I'm going to make you into a blessing for other people. In you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. You are the light of the world, and you are to shine that light into all the families of the earth, and that's going to become explicit in the nation of Israel. There in Exodus 19, right before the Ten Commandments, God commissions, he gives a mission to his country, his nation that he formed to Israel. And he says these words, now therefore, if you obey my voice, keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all the peoples, and you will be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. A priest is someone who is an intermediary between God and man, and the whole nation, it says, of Israel is to be that intermediary priest, person, but between the nations of the world and the God of that world. And then what's really fun, there in 1 Peter 2, that role of priest has been passed on to all believers. And 1 Peter 2, 9 says, you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession. And what's our purpose? A people for God's own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness and into his marvelous light. So that kingdom proclamation is part of our mission as those who are lights of the world.
And that in by living as lights in the world, that we inevitably, automatically impact darkness, because light cannot exist without impacting darkness.
Right, it can't coexist.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, as God calls us to be lights to the world, if we are being lights and our light's not under some basket somewhere, we will impact the world, because we cannot but do impact the world as the light of Christ shines through us.
It is our nature to do so. Yeah, it should be, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should be. And that is, in a sense, the mission of every Christian, to impact the world by shining the light of Christ And doing all the things that salt does.
Right.
Keeping things flavorful.
It's why those metaphors have been so impactful throughout Christian history. Yeah, I mean, it speaks to every human heart.
Some of them are so culturally weighted, but these two really aren't that culturally weighted. I mean, salt has a bit of a broader meaning to the people of Palestine, but it really, the power of these two metaphors is undiminished over the time period.
Much like good salty meat.
Yeah.
All right, last one.
Last question. Number four, righteousness exceeding the Pharisees. The fact that Jesus says, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law," implies that there was a danger of them thinking that it was so. Why did the Pharisees think in Matthew 15:1-20? What was Jesus' response? Where are you tempted to substitute easy external performance for hard internal heart obedience?
Yeah, we've laid it out for you. This is what the Pharisees, this is their approach to the law. Their approach is external obedience. And Jesus, we're going to see in the coming weeks, he doesn't reinterpret, he gives the correct interpretation of the law, which is a heart obedience to God. But the reason I think that the Pharisees and others thought that Jesus and Jesus' disciples, you can read the book of Acts to see that, had a kind of muddy relationship with the law, I think is twofold, at least in this context. First off, the very next section, this is 17 through 20, in 21 and following, Jesus is going to lay out six antitheses, which are statements that ring like this. You have heard that it was said, and then something from the Old Testament, but I say to you. So it sounds as if Jesus is capturing and trying to reject what the Old Testament says, but instead of rejecting it, what he's doing is he's rescuing it from the hands of those who would manipulate what God's Word says. The second reason why people may think that Jesus wants to abolish the law is some of his observance of that law was less than traditional in their culture. And was that Jesus' fault? No, of course it wasn't. It was the tradition's fault. So we point to that there in Matthew 15 for you. In this example, Jesus had bad table manners. He didn't wash his hands before he ate. And the Pharisees were so up in arms about that with their laws of cleanliness and ceremonial cleanliness and ritual purity and things. But Jesus said to them, you silly guys, it's not what's on the outside of the cup that makes it dirty, it's what's on the inside. And that of course speaks to the metaphor of the Pharisees' wrong approach to everything law.
And of course we need to remind people that that doesn't mean you're not supposed to wash your hands before you eat.
Pharisees are a bunch of germaphobes.
But it's, you know, it's the Pharisees lived by rules, 613 of them. And
quite a bit more than that with their traditions.
And the traditions as well.
Which far outnumbered the laws, yeah. I believe.
But Jesus really does make it absolutely clear that, as some people have suggested, okay, Jesus arrived, we can forget the Old Testament. Oh, no, we can't. That Jesus makes it very, very clear that he came to fulfill. Now, we'll talk a bit about fulfilling on Sunday.
Yeah.
But it's a word that you've heard Matthew use time and time again. It's just another of those fulfillment things that
seven times up to this point.
This is the big one. That he fulfills the law, because, and understanding that aright, because so many people have taken the approach that once you get to Jesus, you don't need to worry about the law. Jesus didn't replace the law.
Yeah.
But
things have changed. We don't, you know, we eat pork now and don't do the sacrifices. So I think it's understandable why we're confused on this subject.
Right. Because where does the law end and the things that were particularly designed for the Israelites, right, because of their cultural needs and their location. Where does that begin and end? You know, different people will say different things, but I hope that you'll really enjoy answering these questions and challenging yourself to understand them in a deeper way.
We'll see you guys next week.
As I wait, heart of God.